here we are again. Ready for the next chapter? It's kind of interesting doing an awakening joy retreat and just going through a 5-month course in 5 days. We pack a lot though in each day on a retreat, so maybe it feels like 5 months. So just to bring us up to where we are, cultivating wholesome states, feeling the feeling of gladness that the Buddha encouraged us to feel, and little by little over time inclining our mind towards well-being, not denying the dukkha, opening to it with courage and tenderness and compassion and clarity, so it's not overwhelming when it does come up. But the wholesome states that we've been looking at and applying mindfulness to, intention, mindfulness itself, just being present as a support for the deepest kind of well-being and happiness. Gratitude, a grateful heart that doesn't miss all the blessings in our life and appreciates them and can be touched by them. Opening to the dukkha, not being afraid of it, learning how to work with it. Deepening compassion and tenderness and courage. Integrity, sila, the bliss of blamelessness, just being aligned with our highest values and letting ourselves feel good and inspired by our goodness. And letting go, what I spoke of yesterday is the joy of letting go, whether it's of stuff or busyness or the stories and ideas and control that we never had in the first place. And I also want to acknowledge that letting go is not always joyful. When there's loss and there's grieving, that's part of letting go as well. That's also in the dukkha category, but that we can even process our grieving in a healthy way. And then the full expression of letting go of generosity, the generous heart. And so tonight I want to explore two more wholesome states that are spoken of in the teachings and that we've been practicing here together. This is not going to be something brand new, but just seeing it, how it is consciously cultivated as a source of deep joy and well-being. And the first is connection with ourselves, loving ourselves, seeing who we really are beyond our small ideas and limiting beliefs that we touched on last night. We've done this in the metta practice and really turning our awareness. We've been doing it the whole week, really, in, as I as I think of the practice and mentioned at the beginning, making friends with ourselves. But it's important to see all the things that get in the way so that they don't color our reality, and to see more deeply into who we really are. And as most people experience, this doesn't come so naturally, so easily. By the way, there are some people here who are on the weekend retreat, and there might be some overlap with the weekend, because the main talk that I gave over the weekend was on the judging mind and comparing mind, and so if there's a little bit of, it won't be completely, but a little bit of overlap, forgive the redundancy. But I can say for myself that this did not come naturally to me, loving oneself. When I first started the practice, the thought of even liking myself, let alone loving myself, was a stretch. And if somebody were to say, it's really possible to love yourself, I would have thought, oh, maybe they're talking about 20 lifetimes from now. I didn't like looking in the mirror. I cringed when I looked for most of my early years. And when I was very young, I had this image. This is something that I carried for most of my life. I had this image when I was young that it was a constant or pretty much a strong image and belief inside of me that I was an imposter. And in my mind, you know, I heard about... Was it?
Mitchaze.
Okay, that's it. I was one. And I had this image in my mind, you know, I didn't know about rebirth or, you know, I heard about heaven and all, but in my mind, there was this, before one was born, I imagined that there were souls on shelves waiting to be incarnated, right? And I just, you know, like, I don't know if you have them in carnivals, these little Cupid dolls, one after another, and sometimes you try to throw it and knock it down. Well, that was the image that I had, lots of different little dolls. I was one of them. And there was this big hand that was either God or his assistant coming over, you know, like those machines, you put a little coin in and it comes in, you know, ooh, daddy, can you get a bunny for me? You know, like that. It was, and grabbed the soul and took birth. But I was a mistake because it was really supposed to be the guy next to me. This is an ongoing image. I was an accident, I was a mistake, and if I was found out, I was going to be sent back. So you can see, having that as your belief, you don't have the greatest self-esteem. Yeah, here I am, world. Right. So it took me a while to really get who I was and who I am, as it does for so many people, so many messages that we get that say, you're not quite good enough. Or the comparing mind, as I mentioned over the weekend, that looks at some ideal and says, oh, well, that's not me. And this is so painful. So part of the process, I think this is what the Buddha was teaching, to get cut through what he called the conceit of I am, that separates ourselves from life, that says we're not, we're separate, and we don't quite often in our mind measure up. So One aspect of this is learning forgiveness for just being who we are. And that requires us to not just focus on what's wrong, but to see what's right. And as I've been encouraging us to see when there's goodness and there's wholesomeness that comes through us, it's not just, you know, California Dharma. Oh, isn't that sweet? If you don't see the goodness in you, then all you're going to be seeing is what's wrong. You might see it in everybody else but yourself, and that's such a shame. And I want to read to you, let's see this one, a passage that I find so helpful. You can Google this, or it's in Jack Kornfield's book, The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness, and Peace. And it says, in the Babemba tribe of Africa, when a person acts irresponsibly or unjustly, he's placed in the center of the village, alone and unfettered. I haven't read this yet here. All work ceases, and every man, woman, and child in the village gathers in a large circle around the accused individual. Then each person in the tribe speaks to the accused one at a time, each recalling the good things the person in the center of the circle has done in his lifetime. Every incident, every experience that can be recalled with any detail and accuracy is recounted. All his positive attributes, good deeds, strengths, and kindnesses are recited carefully and at length. This tribal ceremony often lasts for several days. At the end, the tribal circle is broken, a joyous celebration takes place, and the person is symbolically and literally welcomed back into the tribe. Pretty good tribe to hang out with, isn't it? What did your mind do when you heard him say, they gather around each one, what are they gonna do to this guy? Doesn't it make sense? Oh, they're just reminding him what he forgot. They're reminding him of his goodness. And when you think about, I don't know how it is in Israel, but in the United States, the prison system is insane. Where we're mostly, not always, and they're bringing mindfulness, many people are bringing mindfulness into the prisons. And I think there's some here I'm hearing a nod of heads as well, where they're just reminding people what they forgot. They're reminding them of their goodness. And that's what we have to do. We have to remind ourselves of our goodness. It's so easy to forget. This is from Marianne Williamson. Maybe you're familiar with this quote. It's sometimes attributed to Nelson Mandela, but it's Marianne Williamson, in case it's familiar. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You're a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So this is not a selfish thing that you're doing. You can, in your own ease, and being comfortable in your own skin, just remind others it's okay for them to be themselves as well. But we can forget. We can have all kinds of ideas, and maybe you've experienced this, and this is an experienced student's retreat, and you say, gosh, you know, it was all so clear to me before my last retreat or 2 days ago, and now I'm just right back in the same mess. You know, who was I kidding? Have you ever had that thought? No, she says, yeah, with a sarcastic shrug, yeah. So actually, I want to read to you a really beautiful letter that I recently received from somebody who has done a lot of practice and a lot of practice with me. She's come to the two-month retreat at Spirit Rock the last few years and at IMS, and she's from Germany, and she sits when I teach there each year. A beautiful, wise young woman. And she gave herself a hard time for a lot of practice. And she just kind of, in the last year or so, turned a corner. And this is what she wrote. It was after she was sitting 6 weeks at IMS this past year. And she was having a hard retreat. And then she said, thanks to probably many good conditions, towards the end, things began to fall into place again, as it seems they tend to do. And when I got home, I wrote this little note to myself to maybe use in the future. Dear future me, caught in resistance, boredom, doubt, or self-doubt, etc. I know it may not seem this way right now, but it's worth it. Really, really worth it. And it's working, and you're not doing it all wrong. In fact, you can't really not do it right. Your intention is powerful. Even if you may not recognize it at the moment, sometimes it goes a bit undercover. But believe me, it's there, and that's all that matters. You're doing great, and you're wonderful, and I love you. And I'm so grateful that we're doing this. And I'm right there beside you with a lot of faith and compassion. Lean on it whenever you need it. All will be well. There is only one direction this can go. Isn't that beautiful? We just sometimes need to remind ourselves, when we forget, of what we already know. If you've touched it, even touched a little bit of, hey, maybe I'm okay. Even if you forget, it's in there somewhere. So I want to do a practice with you that we did on the weekend once again. Mm-hmm. And this is another way of doing loving kindness, doing metta for yourself. Mm-hmm. There's a line in that I love by Robert Bly. He's a great poet, American poet. He says, every part of us that we do not learn to embrace will become hostile to us. We have to learn to love the whole package. So, you know, in doing the loving kindness, you're sending kind thoughts to yourself. And sometimes you connect with it, sometimes it feels real, and sometimes it's just saying words. I'm sure you probably know that as well. And I want to share with you a metta practice for self that was a turning point in my own life, my own meditation journey. I was doing a 6 week period of metta, and I started out with a week for myself, which is a classical thing to do. You start with yourself and then you open up like we did today to other categories. And I was doing this and, you know, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy. And it was going okay. It wasn't going great, but it was okay. And then at some point, somebody came to my mind who I knew really loved me. And I thought, gosh, this would be so easy if I could just see what they saw. And then I magically connect the dots and I said, what did they see anyway? Why do they love me so much? And that's when I hit on this practice. So I want to share it with you. So please close your eyes. And bring to mind someone who you really have a warm connection with. Somebody who maybe you enjoy hanging out with, and it can be a pet, it can be a child, it can be, you know, just anyone who, any being who when you're with, there's just an easy flow in general. It can be somebody from your past, or just somebody who it's just, you like hanging out with. And imagine that they're right here in front of you, looking back at you, maybe smiling at you and saying, oh, thank you for thinking of me. And just feel that warm connection that you share. It's amazing how we can have this unique connection with each person in our life. And just feel this one with this person. And as you enjoy that flow that you share between you, imagine, if you can, seeing from their reality who they see when they're with their friend. Just get a sense of why they enjoy being with you. What touches them about you? Maybe there's a playfulness that you share, or a kindness, caring. Notice all of it, creativity, maybe interesting conversation. And just see what they see. And from that other vantage point, just see what they would wish for you. Probably they wish for you well, they wish for you to be happy, they wish for you perhaps to see all the good that comes through you. And as if they were sending it to you, send that from their vantage point. Oh, may you see all the goodness in there. And know why I enjoy you so much. And now let your consciousness come back from that vantage point right inside your own body and connect, stay connected from the inside, all of those beautiful qualities. And wish yourself well. Either may I or may you, if that feels better, really see all the good inside. And be happy. And share your love well. If you didn't connect with that, it's okay. Don't make a big thing of it. But if you did, then just keep connecting with what it is that touches your friends about you. we're usually the last one to see what everybody else can see, because we're looking through a filter that says, oh, not good enough. Oh, there's that, there's that, there's that. But that's not the most accurate picture. And I often say this, if you met somebody, suppose you met a friend who really understood you, who really appreciated your take on things, who liked your sense of humor, who loved your taste and understood your hopes and your fears, who really got you, how would you feel about meeting someone like that? Wouldn't it be pretty good? Someone who really, really got you. Wouldn't it be good? One person gets every joke that goes through your head. There's only one that really, really gets you. Unfortunately, they're right inside your own skin. But if you met yourself from the outside, you'd be saying, where have you been all my life? What a far out person. And it's just from this strange vantage point that we don't see who we really are. So this is something to just keep on playing with, that you're fine just the way you are, and getting to know yourself, this is the key. I don't think I read this, Nyoshul Kempo, a great Tibetan master, I think I read it on the weekend, Buddha nature, the essence of awakened enlightenment itself, is present in everyone. Its essence is forever pure and flawless. Those who recognize their true nature are enlightened. Those who overlook it or ignore it are deluded. There's no way to enlightenment other than by recognizing Buddha nature and authentically identifying it within one's own stream of being. That's what we're doing. We're really learning to see beyond the flaws and see who we really are. Now, along with this, it is also one of the most powerful things that we can do to not only see ourselves, but also to allow and let in all the goodness coming our way. Because if we're feeling small and don't feel we deserve it, somehow all of the goodwill that comes towards us, we keep out. Maybe it's dangerous. Maybe we're not used to it. Maybe we don't think we deserve it. Maybe we don't think that, we think that we're fooling people, and if they only knew, they wouldn't give it. But for whatever reason, so many of us, and myself included, it took me a while to get this, keep out all the goodwill coming our way. So here's another little practice that I find really helpful. Whenever anybody has a warm, friendly energy towards you, holds open a door for you, smiles at you, says, hi, how are you? Or good to see you. Or maybe it's a shop owner that you come in to and gives you a friendly hello. Or even passing someone in the street and just a quick exchange, eye exchange, and saying hi. Even as you're crossing a street, and the guy in the car who stops for you, you know, waves at you, right? Even that, don't miss it. Don't miss, there is a connection, and there is an agent of life letting you know that you are loved, that you are worthy of this kind moment. Hi. Just letting it in. It's really, really powerful. And what you start to do as you keep on practicing getting who you are and forgiving yourself for being just who you are and saying, oh, that's okay, then you're not as self-absorbed. You know, when I did that that practice and I saw myself through somebody else's eyes, it wasn't like I was some kind of amazing, holy person. It was just that I kind of got, you know, you're really okay. That was it. That was all I needed. You know, you really are a decent human being. Who knew? Yeah. So you don't have to be somebody like miraculous and a rock star. You just have to be okay, a decent human being. If you met a decent human being that was kind and caring and even wanted to be more conscious, you'd say, oh, glad you're on this planet. Maybe you wouldn't say it, but that's hopefully what you'd think. So the more you see yourself as being okay, the less you have to have everybody else come and prove to you that you're really okay. So this leads to the next step. And this is a practice, actually it's a teaching from the great Zen master Dogen that points to this this next step. The great Zen master, I think 12th century Dogen who lived, he says, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be intimate with all things. Okay, so what does that mean? I won't leave you with Zen cryptic koan. Okay, let's unpack that. To study Buddhism is to study the self. That is to practice the Dharma. This is your laboratory to understand the human experience. To study this self, this mind-body process. To study the self is to forget the self. Once you kind of see who you really are, you're not stuck in, oh, am I good enough? Yeah, you're okay. You're part of life. Okay. Oh, what a relief. And now I don't have to keep on hoping that everybody's going to come along and say, you're really okay. Because if you don't feel it, you can have 7 billion people lined up and saying, you're really okay, you're really okay, and it won't scratch the itch. But as soon as you know for yourself, I'm really okay. Ah, you don't have to be so preoccupied with getting everybody else's approval. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be intimate with all things. Then the barriers lift between you and everyone else. And I'm sure that you have had this experience when you're with your good friends. Are you trying to impress your good friends? No, you're just yourself. And then you can kinda, it's fun to hang out and we can play. And we can just have a good time and we can create a good energy field. Oh, it's so fun hanging out with you. Huh. But when you meet somebody new, oh, maybe I can be a little bit more myself than myself so I can impress them, you know. It's not very, you ever see somebody trying to be impressive? It's not very impressive, is it? But when somebody is just themselves, oh, nice hanging out with you, then it lets them be themselves. So this moves to the next step, the amazing joy that comes from connection with others. Again, this isn't news to you. but it is a very profound and complicated source of joy. It's complicated, I know. And particularly sometimes with people closest to us, it gets most complicated. You know, you think, okay, what is it? A Tibetan master, I said this in a group, one Tibetan master said, it's easy to send love to all beings everywhere. It's just the people in front of me that I have a hard time with. And sometimes the people that we're closest to, we have most investment in. And there can be this feeling of connection, and in one moment, it can change to a feeling of separation. The near enemy of metta is attachment, is wanting something from somebody or having some kind of expectation that they'll hopefully fulfill or won't disappoint. Just a little exercise. Again, I did this, I think, on the weekend. Close your eyes and think of somebody who who's really important to you. And it's okay with this one if it's a complicated relationship. Okay? And first, just get a sense of why they're important to you and how much you really are, really value your connection. And get in touch with a feeling that really would like to see them happy and have a good connection between you. And send them some basic metta. Oh, may you really be happy and know that I care and value our friendship and that I want to see you happy. Maybe see them smiling back. And just notice how it feels in your body and in your mind and in your heart. Oh. I really like you and I really want to see you happy. Now, think of times when you want something from them. When you don't want them to disappoint you, or you have some kind of agenda for them, please do it my way. Notice how it feels inside, in your body, in your mind, in your heart. I won't leave you here, don't worry. Take a nice breath. And once again, get in touch with the fact that you really do want to see them happy. See them smiling again, and just wish them well. May you really be happy, and know that I wish that for you and care. And notice again how it feels inside. In your body, in your mind, and in your heart. You see the difference? You probably do. In just a moment, the person who feels who's so important to you can be a source of great joy or great pain and contraction. They haven't necessarily changed, but our relationship has changed. So this is something to consider. If you come out with love and well-being, that's an energy that affects others. And if somebody is saying you get a sense that they want something from you, how do you feel? Oh, thank you for the direction, okay? No. When they don't want something, of course, we have to keep up with our responsibilities. we can't be irresponsible, and there's agreements and things that we need to expect from each other. But when it's an agenda about how somebody should feel or how somebody should respond when it's not about an agreement, there can be a real contraction that, and a disconnect. It's so interesting how we want intimacy so much, most of us, but it's so scary and complicated at the same time. So this is about connecting and first forgiving, letting go of our agenda. Forgiveness is a really powerful thing. And both asking and extending forgiveness, there's a healing. Then we can go towards a deep connection. And first we'll, let's see what I want to do here. I'll just, yeah, we'll spend a little time with forgiveness. Something to consider, and this is not only about people that are close with us, but people who are difficult for us, perhaps, and that there is something stuck in our hearts around them. The Buddha likened being caught up in anger as holding a hot coal, wanting to hurt somebody else, and not realizing that you're the one that's getting burned. Or drinking some poison and hoping they'll get sick. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that suffer. So how to bridge that gap where the heart is closed? Something, a few things to consider. One is a teaching I love by the Dalai Lama. That he says, if somebody is upsetting you, understand that most of the time they're not doing it to hurt you. Sometimes they might. But most of the time, if they're upsetting you because, for whatever reason, understand that their internal reality is intersecting with your internal reality in a way that does not meet up with your expectations. We are all walking around with our own internal reality that we are sure is the truth. And if everybody just saw it the way I saw it, this would be a fine world. However, everybody else is walking around with their own internal reality as well. And when we're aligned, how wonderful. And when we're not, and somebody has one perspective and you have another, it can be very frustrating, painful, hurtful, etc. I met a young woman a few years ago. She lives in Trinidad. Her name is Lael Ann. And I have permission to share this. And when Jane and I were in Trinidad, we were invited to do some teaching there. And she was a really far out girl. And she said, by the way, I am working on an invention that I think can lead to world peace. I said, okay, well, let's hear it. And she said, it's called a perspective helmet. You put it on, and as soon as you put it on, you understand the other person's perspective. I said, I'll put my money on that. If you can figure out how to do it, I think you will solve world peace. Because that's the problem. We have a hard time seeing somebody else's perspective or understanding what they've been through and what their reality is. A number of years ago, I live in Berkeley. It was the great university, UC Berkeley, one of the major universities in the country, in the States. And I was walking the halls of the school, and I saw this poster, big poster of a child, a very sad child, boy. And it said, a child raised in a family with domestic violence is 700 times more likely to experience domestic violence in their adulthood. It stopped me in my tracks as I thought about that. Whether somebody is on the receiving end or the perpetrating end in their adulthood, 700 times more likely. And when I saw that, I thought, who is to blame in that passing on of causes and conditions and legacy? Who can you blame? It's just habits and conditions passed on. And when you start understanding that we are all products of our causes, conditions, genetics, temperament, experience, everything that affects us, then it's a bit easier to remove the blame and instead bring a compassionate understanding to see, oh, of course, that's why. I love the teaching by Jesus on the cross. For me, it's one of the highest teachings in all of spirituality, where he says, forgive them, they know not what they do. There he is, being nailed to the cross and saying, forgive them, they know not what they do. And from a Buddhist standpoint, this is obvious when you see the real villain is just not seen clearly, is ignorance, and is conditioned by different reality that makes somebody have a particular perspective. And so it doesn't mean that you forgive the action. It doesn't mean that you just let it all go. You have to process your hurt. You have to process your pain and your trauma. But to see that when people do things that are hurtful, they don't understand, they don't see clearly, and there's a lot of confusion and pain in their own heart. And if you're not ready to forgive, then you just be right where you are and forgive yourself for being just where you are. If you wish you could forgive, but you're not quite there, tune into that wholesome wish. I wish I could forgive. I can't right now. I wish I could. That's enough. Because there's something in you that has a wholesomeness to intend to open up your heart. Not ready yet, and not realizing that, or not being able to process the pain that you are feeling. But there's a wholesomeness in that. And in time, maybe you will. And if you have that kind of superiority that says, if they would just get it together, and you have contempt for them, there's a line by Martin Luther King I love. He says, you have no moral authority over those who can feel your underlying contempt. You have no moral authority over those who can feel your underlying contempt, because contempt is missing that feeling of understanding and compassion, and there is a sense of separation. Nobody is going to say, oh, now I need to grow and learn. because contempt just breeds humiliation and shame and more separation. So this is a practice. This is a real practice to be humble in our own heart. And this is where when we make our own mistakes and we blow it, don't waste that. That can be a source of our own compassion for others. When we make mistakes and we do something really stupid, instead of just beating ourselves up and say, what a pathetic jerk you are. I mean, you can say that. But to see, oh, wow, I really lost it. I really got confused. And the more you can see that capacity in yourself, the more you can maybe start to see it in others. Oh, forgive them. They know not what they do. So let's just do a little forgiveness. And again, don't go anywhere where you don't need to or can't, but let's just try this, and then we'll get to the good stuff, the loving. It's coming, if you can hang in there with it. So first, asking forgiveness. Bring someone to mind that you may have acted unskillfully with, and just imagine them in front of you. And get in touch with any remorse you may have. And reflect on your state of mind and the confusion or ignorance that would cause you to harm them or act unskillfully. And with that understanding, if it feels right in your heart, apologizing them to them, silently saying something like, I'm truly sorry for any harm I might have caused you, and I ask your forgiveness. If whenever you're ready to forgive, I'm truly sorry. And you might imagine them hearing your sincerity and taking in your words and forgiving you. Notice how that would feel. And now, extending forgiveness. Just like you sometimes do things that are unskillful, others do too. So bring to mind someone who has acted unskillfully towards you. And in some way might have caused you to suffer, and imagine them in front of you. Maybe from a safe distance, if you need. Somebody that you're wanting to open your heart to. And reflect on their state of mind and the confusion or the ignorance that would cause them to harm you. And extend, if you're able to, extend forgiveness by silently saying, for any harm you may have caused me, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive you. I forgive your confusion. And you might imagine seeing them take in your words and feel your forgiveness. Notice how that feels. so you can just practice this. There's a real release of the pain in the heart. We can carry around for years, decades, the pain of holding on. A teaching I love from Desmond Tutu, who was the architect of the reconciliation after apartheid. He says, forgiveness is the highest form of self-interest. I need to forgive so that my own anger and lust for revenge does not corrode my own being. Forgiveness is the highest form of self-interest. I need to forgive so that my own anger and lust for revenge does not corrode my own being. We're the ones that can release ourselves from the prison of our hatred. The Buddha, in one discourse, maybe you're familiar with, it's called the Simile of the Saw. How many people know the Simile of the Saw? Just two, three. The Buddha says, in this one intense discourse, he goes through, if people do this to you, don't hate. And then if people do this to you, don't hate. And even if they do this to you, don't hate. And it ends up with, if bandits capture you and are sawing off your leg, one who knows my teaching does not respond with hatred. That's a pretty high bar, I grant you. But he's not saying, oh, just say, oh, thank you very much. You do everything you need to do to stop. And you can have clearly aversion, but hatred is a bitterness in our own heart, and it's missing the confusion of those who are doing the harm. Okay, it's just something that you might keep in mind as an aspiration. But just know that we're the ones that get poisoned by our hatred. Okay, so now let's go to the loving side. Okay. How amazing it is that we can love, that we can be touched, that we can both receive and extend this capacity to connect and love. We didn't have to be wired up that way. You know, it didn't have to be that way. We could have just been going around, you know, I don't know how much ants love, but I always imagine ants going through their project, building and building. I don't know if they have a deep sense of connection other than the pheromones or whatever bonds them. But we can love. We can say, hi, so nice to know you. Isn't that amazing? And when we aren't having it colored by attachment, it opens our heart and all the love that's in there gets to shine through and is healing and is deeply satisfying and is a tremendous source of joy. So when we do feel this, don't miss it. And just to know that you can actually bring that out in others. Many years ago, I started my main practice in my life that was first inspired by Neem Karoli Baba, who was the guru in Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, also known as Maharaji. And when I read the book, Be Here Now, it completely blew my mind and something came off the pages that just really touched me and opened my heart. And Maharaji used to say, the best form to worship God is every form. Simple, right? And what I took that to mean was, oh, everything is a part of life, and how can I see the divine in everything? The best form to worship God is every form. How can I see the divine and the goodness in everyone? And so that became a practice of mine, looking for the good. I was a school teacher in New York City for a number of years, and that was my little game that I played with myself at the beginning of every year, to reach and to touch and to feel each child's heart. And some kids, it's so easy, you kind of had to wear shades, you know, because they're so bright. And some kids, you had to take a little bit deeper look because they didn't learn how to get attention by being just themselves, but had to act out. But it was still a game, okay. And pretty much, you know, if you set an intention, there will be a time, a quiet time, not in a big room, but just one-on-one, where somebody really feels that you care and you believe in them. And all it takes is a moment, oh, to be seen. We can do that with others. And the more we look for the good, the more we bring it out. I forget if I mentioned this. My main practice, keep looking for the good. If somebody who comes into a room and they can, you sense that they're judging you and they're looking and seeing all your flaws, how do you feel? Flawed, don't you? Or small or defensive. Somebody else might know all your flaws, but you know they're tuning into how beautiful you are. How do you feel? Beautiful. Or sometimes it's said, beautiful. So you can actually draw it out of them just by seeing the goodness. It lets them feel that, and you believing, looking for it. What a great way to go through life. Not that you'll bring it out in everyone, and you don't want to be naive, and there are certain people that you want to have very healthy boundaries, and there are other people that you want to really be very fierce in your stopping them hurting because their own confusion. But if in general you give people the benefit of the doubt and keep looking for the good, that's what you will draw out of them. That's how it works. And as we said before, metta is like a protection. If somebody has goodwill to you, you probably aren't going to be wanting to hurt them. You just feel that goodwill and can relax and answer in kind. So this starts to let you feel comfortable wherever you are and whoever you're with. Again, knowing healthy boundaries, but knowing that this is really possible. So I wanted to, if I can find it here, close, I know it's been a lot of words, with a poem that somebody just wrote at the last retreat I was on in Finland. And she was feeling this sense of connection with all things, intimate with all things, that we can aspire to. And I said, is it okay if I share that poem? Will you send me that poem? And she wrote it in English, and she shared it in front of the group as we were going around and ending. And she said she'd never shared a poem out loud, and she'd never done it, and she'd never written a poem in English. I said, wow, well, something was coming through you. So this is by Sonia from Finland, called I Never Knew I Had So Many Forms. I never knew I had so many forms. There I am, walking on the soft grass, There I am looking at a flower. There I am smiling to myself. Over there, I'm washing some old wounds with warm tears. And the tall, proud birch tree in her white dress, she's also me. And when our skins touch, we are like life embracing itself. Look at all your forms, my love, and see beauty recognizing its own nature. Swim gently through the soft water sprinkled with tiny yellow stars, and rest peaceful in knowing that there is no end to freedom. This is what happens when we pull up the barriers, remove the barriers, and we feel connected with everything. No separation. How could you be separate in the first place? It's just life loving itself. So let's sit for a few moments. Thank you so much for your patience and kind attention. Enjoy the night air. Again, we'll take about 20 minutes and we'll come back at 10 after 9 and I'll offer you